Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Star Wars TV Cast episode 42.
This week, we're catching you up on everything that's happened in The Mandalorian up to this point.
That's right. Because, yeah, we're really going to do it. The Mandalorian Season 3 premieres next week in like 5 days as we're recording this. And it's been 2 years and 3 months since Season 2. So we thought, I mean, I didn't remember anything about it. So I thought it'd be a good idea to give a little refresher.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that long to me, I guess because of the Boba Fett show, but over two years. My God.
I know. I mean, I was thinking about it because my son Bodhi, who's six, his favorite little sequence is the spider sequence from season two. And he's seen that like 30 times easily. And I was thinking, wow, that when he first saw that, he was only 3 years old.
Wow. Yeah.
Crazy.
So it's been a while for him. It's like, yeah, one third of his life, half his life. I just want to mention, if you listen to our excellent Andor coverage from Jonathan and James, you might be asking yourself, who the hell are these guys? Well, the three of us covered all of The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett together. If you look back in the feed, you'll see those. Then we brought in Jonathan and Eric for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then Jonathan and James volunteered to cover Andor, which I was super happy about because we otherwise weren't going to cover that. And it ended up being such a great show. And they did an awesome job, as you know, if you listen to them. We're all part of the podcasting network. Now, Richard, Chris and I are back for more Mandalorian, and I hope to have Jonathan and James and also Eric on for guest spots this season, if that works out. And I also know Jonathan and James plan to come back full-time for Andor Season 2 whenever that comes out. And then Ahsoka comes out later this year. We'll have a crew on that. I think Jonathan wants to be involved.
Cool.
And one more thing, speaking of Ahsoka, one little piece of news. I read that, you know, we're about to go into Mandalorian Season 3. I read that they also have Mando Season 4 written and that the story's going to tie in with Ahsoka and everything.
Wow.
So they're ready for the next two seasons already.
Amazing. That's cool. They keep cutting across, you know, these mm-hmm. different series. That's cool.
It's like it's a whole universe or something.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
It's crazy.
Do you think they're going to film 3 and 4 back to back Mandalorian seasons? I mean, I guess they've already done 3. It starts, but
I don't know. I don't think so, because I think they've already done everything for 3 and it's ready to get going. But I don't think they've started filming with 4 yet.
Okay,
I could be wrong about that, but it's written.
Cool.
So hopefully it'll be out next year. We want to wait another 2 years for it. Yeah. Stick some other series we don't want to see in there instead again. No offense to Boba Fett. Before we get started, are you guys like excited for Mando Season 3?
Yeah, I'm getting more excited as we get closer, especially doing stuff like this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I am now for sure. Like if you'd asked me a few months ago, it was sort of at the back of my mind and I was doing other things, so I hadn't thought about it, but now I'm ready to go.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be great.
I just binged all of The Mandalorian plus his episodes in Boba Fett. I finished up this morning. So yeah, I'm totally ready to go now. And nice. And I was so happy to just, I was like, is it going to hold up? Am I still going to like it? And I loved it.
Oh, that's cool.
That's mm-hmm. great. There's nothing like going back to a show and watching it and being disappointed.
I mean, I know. It's
if happened. You like it, yeah. If you like a show, that doesn't happen too often, but it can.
It can.
So I'm glad you're excited.
Me too. Well, so here's what we're going to do. I've done this on other podcasts where some time has passed and I thought it would be good to catch people up and people seem to like it. So we're going to do the same format. Basically, we're going to read the wiki summary of each episode and then we're going to just say a word or two about what stands out in our memory about it. I'm going to kind of focus on the important story points in each episode. We'll try not to go super deep because there's a lot to cover. And obviously, if it isn't clear by everything I just said, it's full on spoilers. So if you haven't seen The Mandalorian up until now and you don't want to be spoiled, you should stop listening right now and go watch it.
Definitely go watch it.
So we will start, of course, with Season 1, Episode 1, entitled The Mandalorian. Who wants to go first?
I can go first. I don't mind.
Cool.
Sweet.
All right. Season 1, Episode 1, The Mandalorian. After completing a bounty for guild leader Greef Karga, a Mandalorian bounty hunter accepts an under-the-table commission on the outpost world of Navarro from an enigmatic client with connections to the former Galactic Empire. The client directs the Mandalorian to find an unnamed 50-year-old target, which the client's colleague, Dr. Pershing, insists be brought back alive. The Mandalorian receives a single bar of Beskar steel, sacred to his people, as a down payment. He takes the steel to a covert Mandalorian enclave where an armorer uses it to make a pauldron, which is a shoulder covering armor. The Mandalorian travels to the planet of the target's last reported location where vapor farmer Quill, is it Quill? Mm-hmm. Quill is tired of the constant bounty hunting activity in his area and hopes the Mandalorian can end it. Quill directs the Mandalorian to a heavily defended encampment where he reluctantly works with bounty hunting droid IG-11 to clear the camp and find the quarry, a child. IG-11 attempts to kill the infant per its bounty orders. The Mandalorian shoots and destroys the droid, taking the child alive.
I remember that pretty well, too, when he said 50-year-old target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then of course, you get something in your head of some old dude.
Yeah, that particular species. And then I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what an experience, eh? Going into that episode, having no idea what we were about to see.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you do, and everyone's mind is blown by what it turns out to be.
Props, major props to Disney for not just doing the smart business thing and selling a shitload of Baby Yoda toys.
Oh, yeah.
They kept it a secret, right? So none of us knew until that shot at the end with the, like, E.T. where he's holding his finger up.
No Gungans.
What?
No Gungans, you know, what's his name? Misa, I like it so much.
No, but I'm just saying they could have spoiled it ahead of time to get more sales, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have anybody manufacturing Baby Yoda toys, and they could have, but they wanted to keep it a secret. And that ended up meaning there was a shortage of Baby Yoda toys for a while, and they lost out on some sales, although I'm sure they made it up by then. But I just think it was so cool that they cared more about keeping it a secret and surprising us, which is awesome.
I wouldn't be surprised if Favreau went to them and said, look, you have to do this. We're not doing it if you're going to spoil it and start selling toys ahead of time. The whole point is to surprise people right out of the gate. And you're right. It's not like they haven't made up that money since. So,
right.
Well, so for story points, I mean, we meet the Mandalorian. We see he's the bounty hunter taking jobs. He meets Grogu. Oh, well, we don't know his name yet, but Baby Yoda is what we were all calling him. And probably most of us still are. And really, that's so important because the whole series, I realize as I'm binging it so far, is about Mando trying to do what's best for Grogu. And meeting him is what sets all that off. And everything from that point on really is about him just trying to be a good dad, basically.
Yeah, dad show.
Yeah. And then it also introduces some characters that will be important later. Greef Karga, Quill, IG-11, and the Armorer, I think, is in this one. So
the Armorer, yeah. And I just made a note that I loved seeing another IG-88-style droid, even though it's IG-11. Mm-hmm. I always loved that droid as a kid. Mm-hmm. I had those action figures. I mean, I had a lot of action figures, but I was always in love with IG-88, and so it was fun to see IG-11.
I particularly liked that because you see IG-88, which is one of the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back, hired to find Luke Skywalker, I guess, along with Boba Fett. And he's this skinny droid with a big skinny head. It kind of reminds me of Bert and Ernie or something in his shape. And you're like, it doesn't seem that imposing. But when you see him in action here, spinning around and just killing everybody, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. High accuracy.
Number two.
The Child, Season 1, Episode 2. The Mandalorian returns with the Child to find his ship being stripped for parts by Jawas. He attacks them, but they escape in their sandcrawler. The next day, Quill helps the Mandalorian locate the Jawas and negotiate the return of his ship's components. The Mandalorian agrees to retrieve the egg of a rhinoceros-like mudhorn in exchange for the stolen parts. He and the Child find the mudhorn's cave, but the beast attacks him and damages his armor. After a prolonged battle, the Mudhorn is about to kill the Mandalorian when the Child uses the Force to levitate the beast, allowing the surprised Mandalorian to stab and kill it. He collects the egg and takes it to the Jawas, who crack it open and eat its yellow insides. With his ship's components returned to him, the Mandalorian works with Quill to repair the ship. The Mandalorian then leaves the planet with the Child.
Suga.
That was a cool fight with the Mudhorn.
Yeah, I like the Mudhorn. I don't know if I'd ever seen a Mudhorn before, or if this was the first time it was even in a Star Wars property, but it was pretty fun. And of course, Baby Yoda uses the Force, which we all knew was coming, but it was the first time and fun to see.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
And later, when the armor learns that Mando's armor was damaged in that battle with the Mudhorn, she offers to make the Mudhorn his signet, like the symbol of his clan.
Right.
And, he says it wasn't a worthy kill because he was helped by an enemy. So he's thinking of Baby Yoda as an enemy here. But then later, even later than that, the armor says Baby Yoda is a foundling, and she forges the signet of the Mudhorn and puts it on his shoulder. And so then that's been there ever since. That's his signet.
I mean, I don't blame him. Every once in a while, I feel like my kids are my enemy.
Yeah, quite often. I'm kind of working at odds with them occasionally.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else?
I remember his knife was kind of small for such a big Mudhorn, but...
That's right. He stuck it in his head and you're like, really?
Yeah. It was like a regular little switchblade or something, but hey, it worked.
Did the trick. And then, the Jawas were slurping up that
Yeah.
All right. Season 1, Episode 3, The Sin. The Mandalorian delivers the child to the client on Navarro and collects the bounty, 20 bars of Beskar steel. Uncharacteristically, the Mandalorian asks about the client's plans for the child and is told that they're not his concern. Returning to the Mandalorian enclave, the armor replaces and upgrades the Mandalorian's damaged armor and weapons using most of the Beskar steel. The Mandalorian accepts a new job from Karga and prepares to depart. Feeling guilty for abandoning the child, he returns to the client's base and kills the stormtroopers guarding it. He rescues the child from Dr. Pershing's laboratory where it was being experimented on, but chooses not to kill the doctor. On the way back to his ship, the Mandalorian is ambushed by Karga and other bounty hunters who demand that he hand over the child. He refuses, and a firefight begins. Outnumbered and cornered, the Mandalorian is saved when other Mandalorians arrive from the Enclave, attacking the bounty hunters and allowing him to get to his ship and escape with the child.
So this was fun because we got to see a whole bunch of other Mandalorians, I think,
in a
big battle, right?
Yeah, they come swooping in with their jetpacks.
Yeah, always fun to see jetpacks in use.
Yeah, that was the first time we got to see that, huh?
Yeah.
That was cool. I like the idea of using Beskar steel too as a like transaction, as a medium, you know, for payment. Because you can use it. I mean, they use it for something. It's highly valuable. You can make armor and weapons out of it. I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm. And they do a good job of imparting the value of it.
Like
that
exactly.
One spear he takes as a payment or whatever.
Yeah, especially to Mando, the value of it, and all the other Mandalorians, right? Yeah.
Right. None of that stuff is lost. I mean, he uses all of it all the time.
On the downside, there are times when people betray him just to try to take his armor away from him because it's so valuable. You know, it's like you're carrying a suit of iPhones around with you or something.
Wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. Just walking down some dark street.
Oh, man. Yeah, that my one of my nephews was mugged for his iPhone, and he was pretty afraid of that. So wearing a suit them around is a ridiculous image.
That's basically what he's doing.
Basically what he's doing. Yeah.
I also thought he was a bit. Oh, he was kind of Batman like when he first went into the with the stormtroopers and kind of took him down from the shadows. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was pretty badass.
Well,
he is badass.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Is Batman.
This is a huge development because the Mandalorian has this code. He's a bounty hunter. He's hired to do a job. He does it. No questions asked. He does it to the letter of what he was instructed for the payment he was promised. That's his code. Here he goes against that code and takes the quarry back. And he, in doing that, becomes a pariah. He can't work for the Bounty Hunters Guild. In fact, they're all like after him after this. He's on the run. And he did that because he felt guilty. Like he breaks the code again later on when he takes off his mask, and he only does it in service of Grogu. You know, that's the only time he breaks his code. So that's kind of a big deal. And he's chosen now that it's more important to protect this child than to do whatever he was doing before. So that's a big deal. Also, he gets his full armor, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. I wonder if any of that is imparted by Grogu. you will protect me.
I know, that's right. Never thought about that.
No, neither did I, but, you know, it could be. It could be.
Go back and look and see if you see him waving his hand subtly a couple times.
I am cute. You will lay your life down for me.
You've ever seen. Yeah.
Well, either way, it's an important decision, though, for Mando to make, right?
Either way, it's important to the story. I also, like, he gets his full armor, and I didn't think about that until this time, but he kind of got that armor dishonorably, given that, you know, the payment of Beskar was to deliver this child, and then he goes and takes the child back, but he didn't give the armor back in return.
All right, episode number 4, Sanctuary. Arriving on the sparsely populated forest planet Sorgan, the Mandalorian encounters ex-Rebel Alliance shock trooper turned mercenary Cara Dune. Dune is in hiding and asks the Mandalorian to leave so as not to draw attention to the planet. He prepares to leave, but is approached by desperate fishermen who offer to hire him. They want to drive off a band of Clatoonian raiders that have been attacking the village. He accepts the job in exchange for lodging and uses their credits to enlist Dune's help. They are housed by Omera, a widowed mother, and the Mandalorian confides in her that no one has seen him without his helmet since his tribe took him in as an orphan child. The Mandalorian and Dune help the villagers drive the raiders away and destroy an old Imperial AT-ST the raiders were using. A few weeks later, with peace restored, the Mandalorian plans to leave the child in the village, but a guild bounty hunter finds them and is killed by Dune. Realizing the child is not safe in the village, Mandalorian departs with the child. Do all the episodes end with the Mandalorian leaving with the child?
Departs with the child, right? Yeah. Escapes with the child.
Yeah.
Leaves with the child.
I mean, so this is kind of important because he decided it was important to save Baby Yoda, but his instinct was to then drop him off somewhere where he would be able to lead a normal life. But this episode, he realizes he can't do that because he would be in danger. So he has to keep him with him. When he's decided that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the quick fight that Mando and Cara Dune had just sort of at the beginning. Oh, yeah. They had a fist fight. It's fast, but it's that one that ends with Baby Yoda sitting there drinking the soup, just watching them. And it's a little tiny moment of comedy, I thought, which was pretty good. And I actually did go back and watch this part again of this one, and I realized that she's just punching him in the helmet the whole time, and I wondered how effective that would be, and it must just not feel very good on the hands, but I don't know.
Yeah, punch him in the neck.
Yeah, somewhere softer, maybe.
Right. What do you remember about this one, Rich?
I enjoyed the AT-ST fight and, you know, all the planning and everything they had to do just to take down this one machine. Because you remember those things from Return of the Jedi, the little furry dudes just took them out like one at a time really quick. You know, this one really shows, you know, what a big machine like that can do. I thought that was pretty cool. I really liked it too. So I went and bought the model. I got it around here somewhere.
Oh, wow. Just based on this. That's cool. This episode also established, I think this is the first time it was established that no one ever sees him without his helmet. He told his love interest that no one had seen him without it since he was a kid.
He does take it off in the episode, though.
He took it off, right in front of a big window where there's people just right outside. and it introduces Cara Dune, who was a pretty big character throughout the series, but will no longer be because since the last episode has aired, Gina Carano got in trouble with Disney for tweeting out like anti-vax stuff and they fired her. And even though I personally don't agree with any of those tweets, I still didn't feel right about what happened there. I don't like when people get fired for stuff that they do on their own time. They should have just put out the correct information. I don't know.
Yeah.
But everybody has different opinions about it. So
That was a good character.
I agree. I'm going to miss the character. What I think of her is a separate issue.
Yeah. Right. me too. But they were going to do a whole spinoff with her. I think it was called Rangers of the New Republic and that just got scrapped.
Right.
No.
Mm.
All right. Season 1, Episode 5, The Gunslinger. The Mandalorian defeats a pursuing bounty hunter in a dogfight. He lands his damaged ship at a repair dock run by mechanic Pelimoto in Mos Eisley on Tatooine. He seeks work in a cantina to pay for the repairs, meeting aspiring bounty hunter Toro Calican, who is a tracking elite mercenary and assassin, Fennec Shan. Calican needs to catch Shan to join the guild, and the Mandalorian agrees to help in exchange for the bounty reward. They capture Shan in the desert, but she destroys one of the speeder bikes. When the Mandalorian retrieves a dewback for transportation, Shan tells Calican that the Mandalorian betrayed the guild by stealing the child, making the bounty on him and the child worth more than hers. Shan offers to help Calican capture the Mandalorian if he sets her free, but he shoots her instead and rides the remaining speeder bike to the repair dock, taking Moto and the child hostage. The Mandalorian arrives, disorients Calican with a flare, and kills him. He uses Calican's money to pay Moto for the repairs and leaves Tatooine.
With the child.
With the child. Right.
Don't forget the child.
Right. Yeah, this was a good episode, too, with a new character, Fennec Shand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're getting into this, introducing a new badass character every episode, huh?
Yeah. And they come back, most of them. Yeah. Not Toro Calican, but yeah, she becomes Boba Fett's right-hand woman later on.
Yeah, she plays a big part later on, of course. And don't forget, we see Boba Fett's legs in this, but we don't know it's him yet, right?
That's right, yeah.
In this episode. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Right at the end there.
And Pelimoto, she's another, you know, this is her first appearance, and she shows up a few more times.
Yeah, she ends up playing a bigger part going forward than I kind of expected, but mm-hmm. That's fine. Yeah. I enjoy that character. I thought her droids were a little silly at first, but yeah. If there isn't, I mean, it is Star Wars. There's always something a little bit silly, but I can handle this one.
I mean, yeah, to me, her scenes are very Disney and for the kids, and they're fun, and I don't mind. Yeah. I watched and loved Andor, and it's very adult compared to all this stuff. So I'm glad they have stuff with different tones, but just because they had an adult one that I really like doesn't mean I don't also really appreciate this stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
She showed up in Boba Fett, too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She brought Grogu to... Mando. Yeah, I also thought it was really fun to see the cantina from Star Wars just recreated in this episode, you know, going back to Tatooine and everything.
That's the nostalgia thing kicking in. I like seeing that kind of stuff too. Takes me back.
All right. Season 1, Episode 6, The Prisoner. The Mandalorian contacts his former partner, Ran Malk, for work and is offered a place in a 5-man job. He's joined by ex-Imperial sharpshooter Mayfeld, Deveronian strongman Berg, played by what's that guy's name? He plays the crab in SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh yeah, he was.
I don't know.
He was also in the one movie.
I gotta find it out. Yeah, he's that guy that's in that one movie. Clancy Brown. Yeah, iconic guy. Droid pilot Q90 and Twi'lek knife expert Shion for a mission to rescue Shion's brother Quinn, a prisoner of the New Republic. The team infiltrate the prison ship, fight off security droids, and kill the ship's security chief, though not before he triggers a security beacon. The crew rescue Quinn, but double-cross the Mandalorian. Q90, finds a message from Karga to the Mandalorian discussing the child, and finds the child in the Mandalorian ship. Meanwhile, the Mandalorian escapes, defeats each crew member, and captures Quinn. The Mandalorian leaves Mayfeld, Berg, and Shion locked up on the prison transport before delivering Quinn to Ron. He departs with his payment while Ron immediately launches a fighter to kill him, but discovers the New Republic beacon on Quinn. A trio of New Republic X-Wing fighters arrive and attack Ron's station. They just blow it up without even, like, yeah. Must be bright, right? The beacon's going off, just blow it up.
There's a signal, blow it up.
Start shooting.
I love this episode.
Yeah, it was a good cool. one. It's a good one. It's a prison breakout, right? Which is sort of a heist. And I always like a good heist, so it was fun. I also noted that... when they first got into the prison ship, it was, you know, white panels on the walls. It reminded me of the original trilogy with the look of the interior of those ships. And then after a while, it all turns red, I guess, because of emergency lights or something like that. But it was equally striking when it was all red. So kind of fun to see that. And
especially with Berg, the Deveronians look like devils or demons, so it looked kind of hellish.
Yeah, he fit right in for sure.
Yeah.
Mando had a hard time with him.
And then X-Wings. Yeah. X-Wings are awesome. I love seeing X-Wings, so it was fun to see them here too.
Totally. This one had more of a more of an intense dramatic flair as he was hunting them down one at a time, you know?
Yeah.
Not
darker.
So much, just darker, yeah.
And those security droids, they look like they came out of some other sci-fi movie. They were cool though. Day the Earth Stood Still or something.
Right.
And I loved the Q90 droid. He just, with his like insectoid head kind of, and just creepy and cold, and the way he flew the ship down in a way that no human could.
Yeah. Yeah, that he was a droid for sure. That's what scares me about droids.
I know.
No feeling.
And later on, the frog woman who couldn't communicate with Mando uses his head to talk.
Oh, right.
And you think he's back for a second, but it's her talking to him. That was a cool sequence.
Repurposed.
So my important story points for this one. Well, Mando's just basically trying to find work now. It doesn't really progress the story. He's basically just like a working father. He's got Baby Yoda with him, but he picked up a job, right? He's just trying to make some money. And then one other thing, that it's because of security records showing that he tried to save this security chief and also locked up these mercenaries. I think more importantly, that the X-Wing pilots in a later episode let him go because they saw that, I guess. So,
yeah. Ex-Imperial sharpshooter. That's like a oxymoron, huh? Like military intelligence, huh?
Clearly he's not a stormtrooper. They're not sharpshooters. But.
Well, they made fun of it. He said, "I wasn't a stormtrooper," because somebody made that same joke at him in the episode. And Bill Burr famously had been dissed on Star Wars as being like for geeks. And then I think that's what made Jon Favreau want to get him on an episode.
Oh, maybe. And he sort of made those comments and then had the opportunity to be part of it and jumped on it. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
And by the way, that character Mayfeld, he comes back in another episode too. That's pretty pivotal.
He does. Right, that's true. All right. Well, season 1, episode 7, The Reckoning is next. The Mandalorian receives a message from Karga, whose town on Navarro has been overrun by the client's troops. Karga proposes that the Mandalorian use the child as bait in order to kill the client and free the town. In return, Karga would stop his guild from hunting the Mandalorian and the child. Sensing a trap, the Mandalorian recruits Dune and Queel, with Queel bringing along a rebuilt and reprogrammed IG-11 to protect the child. They meet Karga and his associates, but are attacked by flying creatures. Karga is injured, and the child uses the Force to heal him. In return, Karga murders his associates and confesses his original plan to shoot the Mandalorian and take the child to the client. Instead, Karga pretends that Dune has captured the Mandalorian while Queel returns the child to the ship. During the meeting, troops led by the client's boss, Moff Gideon, open fire on the building and kill the client, trapping the Mandalorian, Karga, and Dune inside. Moff Gideon arrives, demanding the child. Outside the town, two scout troopers kill Queel and take the child.
That was sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a huge episode, though, like introduction of Moff Gideon. They're stuck in there. We don't know what's going to happen. A little bit of a cliffhanger ending, I think. Mm-hmm. And poor Queel is dead. And IG-11's back, which I was excited about.
But you're also like, is IG-11 good? Because they introduced, you know, that, like, well, he's reprogrammed, but he has a mind of his own.
Yeah.
I think they called him a nurse droid in this one.
Nurse droid, yeah. And voiced by Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had that whole sequence of Queel having to train him because he couldn't walk right and he was all awkward and stuff. Yeah, Queel died. That was a big story point. That was sad. Nick Nolte. By the way, Nick Nolte was just on another show I'm podcasting about, Poker Face, and he sounds exactly the same. It's just Queel.
Does he?
And I think it's also pretty big that Karga becomes a friend again which he remains up until where we are now. And because Mando helped him, he's no longer being hunted by these bounty hunters. And I think he's probably back in the guild. So
right.
That's a big story point. And I think this might be the episode where we learn his name is Din Djarin. Moff Gideon is showing that he knows everything about them as he's talking to them from outside. Maybe that's next week, though. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure about that. That could be next episode, because I think this one, Moff Gideon just steps out at the end.
Okay, yeah.
And really doesn't deliver his monologue or dialogue until the next episode. But it could it's hard to recall.
Mm-hmm. Where he says, all right, we've got you cornered. I have 1,000 troops out here, so we're going to give you till nightfall to decide what you want to do.
Right, yeah. All right, well, let's find out. Season 1, Episode 8, Redemption. IG-11 defeats the scout troopers and rescues the child. Gideon informs Karga, Dune, and the Mandalorian that they will be executed if they do not hand over the child. IG-11 arrives to save the others. Gideon's forces attack and the Mandalorian is injured. He instructs the others to escape and find help from his Mandalorian enclave while IG-11 removes his helmet to tend to his wounds. Joining the others afterwards, the Mandalorian discovers that the other Mandalorians are gone except for the Armorer. She tasks him with returning the child to its kind before holding off the arriving stormtroopers. The group escapes down the underground lava river on a ferry, but are ambushed by stormtroopers at the end of the tunnel. IG-11 self-destructs to defeat them. Gideon attacks in a TIE fighter, but the Mandalorian uses his newly forged jetpack to bring down the craft. After burying Quill, the Mandalorian embarks on his new mission with the child while Karga and Dune stay behind on Nevarro. Gideon survives the wreckage and frees himself with the dark saber.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool.
Huge revelation at the end with the dark saber as he cuts himself out of that wrecked TIE fighter. Pretty awesome, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a hell of a cliffhanger.
And they didn't explain it, so only if you were a Star Wars geek did you know that that's a Mandalorian saber that whoever wins it in battle can lay claim to the throne of Mandalore.
Yeah. Right, which I think I learned doing this podcast, so I have you guys to thank for that.
IG-11's death was really sad. I was sad to see him go.
Oh, yeah. How about the taking off of the helmet? Like they sort of, yeah. I remember feeling, oh, the show went for a bit of a loophole. He took his helmet off in front of a droid, so it doesn't count. What are they going to do? Are they going to keep doing this every time? You know, I don't know.
Right.
I just remember thinking, you know, in Game of Thrones, which was the only thing by that point I'd ever seen Pedro Pascal in, he was such a hunk and, you know, just like charming and I don't know, like a man, ladies man kind of, although I think he was bisexual. But anyways, then here he takes off his helmet and he's a pasty white dude with his hair like all matted and everything.
His face is all beat up.
Yeah.
Well, you wear a helmet 24 hours a day. You're not going to look great under there. Yeah.
Couple of pimples.
Yeah. And this episode set Mando on his new mission of returning Baby Yoda to the Jedi, which is pretty much the whole focus of season 2.
Right.
Yeah. IG-11. I was trying to figure out like, why are we sad that he died? He's a robot. But then, you know, he saw Mando's face. He dedicated his last few days to protecting the child. So I guess, yeah.
I mean,
I was sad to see him go.
To me, all the droids in Star Wars, well, most of them anyway, have personalities, so you care about them just like people. You know, R2-D2, I never want to see anything bad happen to him.
No, true. Can you imagine if he was destroyed, like permanently destroyed? That would be devastating, R2.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember if we knew that Giancarlo Esposito was on the show before we saw him on screen? I don't recall anymore.
I don't remember.
Can't remember, yeah.
Either way, I mean, kind of a big deal. Great actor, and you know, I think cast well in this role.
Yeah.
I just don't recall if it was a surprise or not. I think maybe if it was a surprise, I might remember. So maybe we did know going in, but
I don't know. Yeah, I don't
know. First appearance and a great one.
I think we probably did know. Yeah, I love that guy, by the way. I moderated a few panels with him, and he's always amazing on those. He just gives it his all.
That's cool.
All right, moving on to season 2, episode 1, The Marshal. The Mandalorian has been tasked with returning his charge, a child, to its people, the Jedi. He begins searching for other Mandalorians he believes can help him find the Jedi, and is directed to a rumored Mandalorian operating out of the Tatooine town Mos Pelgo. There he learns that there is no Mandalorian in Mos Pelgo, but is confronted by Marshal Cobb Vanth, who wears Mandalorian armor. Vanth explains that he freed his town from the control of the mining collective using this armor, which he bought from Jawas in the desert. The town is now frequently attacked by a Krayt dragon. Vanth agrees to give the Mandalorian armor back to its people in exchange for help in killing the Krayt dragon. The Mandalorian arranges an agreement between the villagers of Mos Pelgo and a local clan of Tusken raiders to work together to kill the Krayt dragon in exchange for peace between the groups. They work together to lure the Krayt dragon, which is ultimately killed by the Mandalorian. He leaves with Vanth's armor and the child, watched by a scarred Boba Fett.
Oh, so Krayt dragon, guys. The thing was massive and required all kinds of people involved to take it down. Pretty fun, but he lures it, or he tricks it into swallowing a bantha full of explosives, right? And then he blows it up from the inside. Is that what happens?
Yeah, I remember it exploding.
Yeah, but he also was in there.
He was, but then he flies out, and then the thing explodes, or maybe he explodes himself out a hole. I don't know. But.
First, like, he went out, and there was, I forget exactly what they were trying to do, but one of the, it was either a Tusken raider or one of the townspeople took a bantha up to the opening of where the Krayt dragon dwelt to try to lure it out to eat the bantha. And instead it ate the guy. It came out and ate the guy. And the bantha was just sitting there like, huh?
Didn't see that coming.
But then they couldn't defeat it. So they had to go back and plan some more. Yeah. And they lined up all these explosives that they tried to lure it on top of, and they set them off and it didn't do anything. So then they had to improvise. Yeah. And Mando ended up flying right down into his gut.
I made a couple of other notes about this episode. I thought the cold open on this one was cool.
Oh yeah.
He goes and there's Gamorrean wrestling happening. And then, he ends up taking that guy outside and beating him up and leaving him hanging upside down in the dark to die. And I thought that was pretty dark, even for the Mandalorian.
And that was another example of the guy turned on him to try to take his armor.
Yeah, that's right. That seems to keep happening. But, you know, I thought a pretty exciting way to open the season.
And that's memorable to me because there's the way he died by hanging there was because when Mando shot out the streetlights, these creatures with red eyes come out.
Yeah.
But you can always see the glowing red eyes in the dark background. And that really freaked Bodhi out as a 3-year-old watching this to the point where anytime we see red eyes when we're driving, you know, or not red eyes, red lights like on beacons or whatever, he's like, what is that? And then here in the bedroom, my exercise elliptical machine shines a little red eye light, and he always makes me unplug it.
Oh, wow.
When you're driving along and you see a red light and he says, what is that? You obviously answer, a Krayt dragon.
Well, yeah, it's a monster.
It's a monster.
Don't worry about it.
And then, guys, Cobb Vanth is introduced, Timothy Oliphant, who is very, very cool. Very I like good. Him.
He did a great job.
Who Richard and I went to high school with. He was a senior.
Right. I remember that story. Yeah. I remember you telling me that. That's fun. You should call him up and get him on the podcast.
He wouldn't know who the hell I was.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah.
And this sets Mando on the path of looking for other Mandalorians. Well, no, I guess he already was, but we didn't know that until this episode that he thought for some reason that other Mandalorians would help him find Jedi.
Right.
So now he's still looking for Mandalorians.
I don't remember the watched by a scarred Boba Fett. Was that just like at the very end?
Yeah.
Huh.
He was there with his gaffy stick or whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could see him in full this time.
Did we know it was him?
Yeah, because he, you know, all the clone troopers they look the same.
So oh, yeah, that's right.
I think we knew at that point it was him.
Did we know it was Boba Fett's armor that Cobb Vanth had? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Yeah, that green armor.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, season 2, episode 2, The Passenger. In exchange for information on other Mandalorians, the Mandalorian agrees to take a frog lady and her eggs from Tatooine to the estuary Moon Trask, where her husband will fertilize the eggs.
Oh, get down.
Yeah. Due to the eggs' fragility, they must travel at slow, sublight speeds. On the way to Trask, they are confronted by X-Wing fighters who force the Mandalorian to a nearby icy planet because he is wanted by the New Republic for his role in a prison break. He crash lands on the planet. While the Mandalorian fixes the ship, the child stumbles upon numerous eggs inside an ice cave, which hatch to reveal a swarm of spider-like creatures. The Mandalorian, child, and Frog Lady are trapped in the Razor Crest, Mandalorian's ship, until the X-Wing pilots find them and kill the creatures. They explain that because the Mandalorian helped apprehend his accomplices from the prison break, they will drop the arrest warrant and leave him with a warning. After the Mandalorian finishes the repairs, the tattered Razor Crest takes off and resumes its journey to Trask.
I know why you're trying not to laugh, because you're thinking of something that wasn't even in this summary.
Really? What is it? Oh, I know.
Maybe
I'm wrong. No, when he eats the eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. Baby Yoda keeps eating the eggs.
He keeps eating the eggs, yeah.
Mando's like, no. I know. And at the very, the last thing you see, he like pulls one out. And
yeah. Delicious eggs.
That's dark humor, man.
This episode was so weird. Like, the mission was weird, taking her to have her eggs fertilized, and then she gets in that bath with them where just before the spiders come out. Like, this was such a weird episode. But reading about it now, I kind of think back fondly.
I loved it. The spider chase was so exciting, and I don't blame Bodhi for that being his favorite sequence, because I will sit right there and watch it with him.
Yeah, that was cool.
So cool. And the iciness of it. And,
But it sounds pretty funny when you're reading it on paper, huh?
Yeah.
Take a frog lady with her eggs to Tatooine.
To get fertilized.
To get fertilized, yeah. And this episode, I think the Razor Crest really starts taking a beating as well.
Yeah.
And it never really comes back, but because it's not in good shape after when they have to leave.
They do get it repaired, and then it gets blown up.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think at the end it's flying off and it's like sputtering and All right. But yeah, actually there's not much plot forwarding in this one. I mean, maybe you could say something about the Rangers letting him go just sort of shows his relationship with the New Republic. But I don't
know. And it's just a bit of a callback to the prison thing, right? So again, nice to see them. Good to see X-Wings, but not too much going on.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, right now, this catch-up is good to remind us of the story, but I love this show not so much for the plot as just for the coolness of the moments. Like you said, that one episode was a prison break, and the episode where he fights the AT-ST, that was like a classic Western thing where they train the villagers to fight, you know? And then there's one coming up that's like this whole samurai kind of a thing. So it's just cool. Like that's what I like about it.
And this one was Frog Lady and her eggs.
So. Yeah.
Well, it's monster movie, you know, big spider. Spider.
Oh, you're right. Let's focus on that.
I guess. I don't know.
All right, season 2, episode 3, The Heiress. At Trask, the Frog Lady reunites with her husband, and they direct the Mandalorian to a local inn where he can find information on other Mandalorians. A fisherman offers to take the Mandalorian to others of his kind, but on board the fishing ship, he is ambushed by the fishermen who want to sell his armor. The Mandalorian and the child are rescued by three Mandalorians, led by Bo-Katan Kryze? She enlists his help in seizing weapons from an Imperial freighter in exchange for information on the Jedi. After boarding the freighter, Bo-Katan reveals that their main objective is to capture the ship along with the weapons for their war effort to reconquer Mandalore. The Imperial captain is instructed by Moff Gideon to crash the ship, but his efforts are stopped by Bo-Katan, who questions the captain about the Darksaber. The captain kills himself, Bo-Katan directs the Mandalorian to meet the Jedi Ahsoka Tano in the city of Kalodan on the forest planet of Corvus. With the Razor Crest partially repaired, the Mandalorian and the child continue on their journey.
You got all those names, Rich?
That's a lot. It's yeah. Important.
See, this is what I was thinking about, because at the end of this one, again, the Razor Crest is like, looks like it's being held together with shoelaces and gum, and yeah, he tries to take off. So it's still in rough
shape.
Remember
when he came down for a landing on the platform and was like, all right, here we go. And it looks like he's going to land it, and then it just topples off into the ocean.
Yeah,
it
just
falls into the show, this crane lifting it up. That's amazing.
Poor Razor Crest. But how about Bo-Katan? Very cool character in this one. And Katie Sackhoff, you know, so. Who
did the voice in the Clone Wars.
That's right. Yeah.
Another good one.
Yeah.
And I just love the whole, like, Worf fisherman feel, you know, with the, those, I forget what they're called, the quarry or whatever, with the creatures with the octopus mouths.
Yeah.
Doesn't he call them, like,
a trap?
Calamari?
No, that's calamari? That's the fish head guys, but the octopus face guys are...
Sorry.
Different. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
But there's some of them there, too, the fish head guys.
I think, yeah, that's right. Calamari. That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, this really sets up the story about reconquering Mandalore that it seems like we're probably going to go towards in season 3. And there's so much history with Mandalore. And after watching Mandalorian season 2, I decided to go back and, I mean, for the first time, actually, watch all of the Clone Wars, 133 episodes. So I binged them, and now 2 years later, I've pretty much forgotten everything, and that was pointless.
And I have to do it again, man.
That's what happens when you binge.
There was stuff about Mandalore in there.
The whole reason you watched it.
I know.
And Bo-Katan is her story is intersects in with the Darksaber and stuff, because that's what she's looking for, right?
So in the Clone Wars, she was, I don't remember the details seriously, but I do remember that she was part of a Mandalorian family, and she wanted to be reinstated as the ruler of, or she wanted to rule Mandalore. And after a bunch of story, I think it was Sabine Wren, another character from the show Rebels. So this happened in Rebels, actually, gave her the Darksaber. And that was the last we saw of her. But then we learned that there's this purge and the Night of 1,000 Tears where Moff Gideon retook Mandalore, I guess, or at least was part of it, and somehow got the Darksaber. We don't know how yet. Probably fought Bo-Katan. But then when you see the armorer talking with Mandalorian later in the Boba Fett series, he's like, I mean, what they say here. Oh, actually, I jumped ahead. When Mando has the Darksaber after he defeats Moff Gideon in the finale here, and he tries to give it to Bo-Katan so she can go lead Mandalore like she wants to, but she won't accept it. And that's when Moff Gideon's kind of laughing, ha ha ha, because he knows that you can't accept it unless you've won it in battle. But that at the time I was like, well, in Rebels, she did accept it and hadn't won it in battle. Sabine Wren gave it to her. But then in Boba Fett, the armorer tells Mando, if you accept it and you haven't won it in battle, then the lore is that you're cursed. And so the suggestion is that's why the purge happened and Mandalore was taken from Bo-Katan, because she hadn't won the Darksaber in battle. And now she doesn't want to repeat the same mistake again and just take it from Mando. That's what I got from all of that anyway. So now Mando's in a weird position. He's got the Darksaber. He doesn't want to lead Mandalore, but he's got this friend Bo-Katan who he'd love to give it to, but the rules say she has to defeat him. And I think kill him. I'm not sure about that part, but at least defeat him in battle. So maybe they should just play chess or something. Would that count? I don't know.
Have an arm wrestle. Let her win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oops, I lost. Here, it's yours.
Yeah.
Bye. So I'm sure, like, more of that story is coming up in the summaries that we're about to read, but I just think because it's Bo-Katan's first appearance, it's worth pointing all that out. And I think it's going to be, because we also know that Mando has to go to Mandalore to redeem himself because he took his helmet off, you know, that's what the armorer says. So I feel like we're getting into some story about Mandalore itself and who's going to rule it and all that kind of stuff coming up.
Is this the one too, where he had like a flashback to when he was a kid? I remember there was a flashback where he and his parents or his caretakers were like underground when they were doing the purge of Mandalore.
Yeah, those happened over the course of a few episodes. I don't remember if it was in here. It might have been. But you see, like, the droid's about to kill him, which is why he hates droids.
Yeah.
But then one of the Mandalorians comes and saves him.
I had forgotten about those scenes. I don't remember if they're in this episode, but they were definitely there. Good sort of little bit of backstory fill in with that stuff. But I was going to say,
that's
Jason,
why he's a foundling, because he became orphaned. And,
That's right. I was going to say, after listening to you talk about Bo-Katan there, it sounds like you have a pretty good handle on her story leading up to this and what she's doing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's, I just said the bare minimum that I was able to retain because there's so much more, but thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Season 2, Episode 4, The Siege. The Razor Crest requires further repairs before it can reach Corvus, so the Mandalorian and the child take a detour to Navarro, where they're reunited with their allies Cara Dune and Greef Karga. While the Razor Crest is being repaired, the Mandalorian is shown how much things have improved on Navarro since he was last there, under the stewardship of Karga as magistrate and Dune as marshal. The last challenge they're facing is a remaining Imperial base, which the Mandalorian agrees to help them destroy. They discover that the base is being used as a laboratory by Dr. Pershing to conduct experiments with the child's blood, which has a high M count. They destroy the base and are pursued by stormtroopers on speeder bikes and TIE fighters. Dune and Karga manage to stop the speeder bikes while the Mandalorian destroys the TIE fighters with the repaired Razor Crest. The Mandalorian and the child leave for Corvus, unaware that an Imperial spy has planted a tracker on the Razor Crest for Moff Gideon.
Oh my.
Yeah, so this one was cool. I thought the, you know, again, it wouldn't be Star Wars without sort of a high-speed chase through trenches or rocky mountainous areas. So we got a bit of a trench run there. Pretty cool, which I like. I like seeing that kind of stuff, so I was okay with it.
Me too. I liked it more this time than I did back then. I remember not being as impressed for some reason, but this time I was like, oh yeah, it's like classic Star Wars. You got a guy in the gunner seat shooting at TIE fighters and stuff.
Yeah.
I have to say, I don't remember this one very well. This is the one where they blew up the base at the end, did they?
Yeah, no.
No, there's another one where they blow up a base.
There's another one kind of like that. Okay. This is the one where they got the guy who was the bounty in the very first episode when Mando said, I can bring you in warm or bring you in cold.
Oh, yeah, the blue guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and they took his land speeder and he was all worried about it. And then at the end, it was Cara Dune is driving this big Imperial like shuttle over a cliff and it lands right on the guy's land speeder. Smashes it flat.
Cool.
This is the base does get destroyed at the end though of this one.
Oh, does it? It doesn't. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think it has to do with lava or something like that, isn't it? It's heating up or it's over. Yeah.
There's a lava flow. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, also you hear, Dr. Pershing say that, this is where we learn that they wanted Baby Yoda. The reason why they wanted him, why Moff Gideon wanted him, was for his blood with its high M count, which we all know means midichlorian count, but they didn't even want to say the word.
No.
but Dr. Pershing, you overhear him saying, there were promising effects for an entire fortnight, but then sadly the body rejected the blood. I highly doubt we'll find a donor with a higher M count though. So I think you kind of figure that they're trying, he also mentioned cloning, so that they're trying to create force sensitive clones to help reinstate the Empire, I think is what he figured out.
And
then using his blood.
Didn't we kind of think that might have been tied into the last Star Wars movie?
Yeah.
Or with maybe. With the Emperor?
Maybe.
Get something going for him. Yeah, okay, I remember that.
We thought it might, yeah, but we don't know. Because of cloning.
Yeah. Because cloning. I think we also see the Dark Troopers at the end of this too, don't we? Not in action, just standing there ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But we know those are going to come back.
Yep.
Cool.
That was like the first tease.
Yeah. Okay. Season 2, Episode 5, The Jedi. The Mandalorian and the child arrive at the city of Caladan on the planet Corvus to find the population living in fear of the city's magistrate, Morgan Elsbeth, and her guards, including a hired mercenary named Lang. Elsbeth offers to give the Mandalorian a spear of Beskar steel in exchange for killing Ahsoka. The Mandalorian finds Ahsoka outside the town and presents the child to her. Using the Force, Ahsoka determines that the child's name is Grogu, and that he had begun training as a Jedi before the rise of the Empire. She agrees to continue his training if the Mandalorian helps defeat Elsbeth. They overpower the guards, free the citizens, and the Mandalorian kills Lang. Ahsoka confronts Elsbeth and demands to know the whereabouts of her master, Grand Admiral Thrawn. Afterwards, Ahsoka refuses to train Grogu due to his close attachment to the Mandalorian. Instead, she directs them to an ancient temple on the planet Tython, where Grogu can use the Force to find other Jedi and decide his own fate. She also gives the Beskar spear to the Mandalorian.
Right. I remember there was a lot of excitement because Grand Admiral Thrawn was mentioned.
Yeah.
Are we going to see him? Are we going to see him? Yeah.
And that's a character that was first introduced in this novel series, Heir to the Empire, mm-hmm. by Timothy Zahn. But then that became non-canon. But the character appeared in the Rebels series. And there's a whole thing I could get into on that. But I'll just say that Ahsoka was involved in that. And probably her series, which is coming out later this year, will deal with trying to find Thrawn and a friend of hers that was with Thrawn the last time they were seen in that Rebel series.
That series of novels is the only Star Wars books that I've ever read. I mean, it was years ago at this point, but yeah. I was really into them at the mm-hmm. time. So it would be
Did
cool.
You ever watch Rebels?
Cool to see him. No.
Thrawn was good in that. This blue guy. Yeah. He was a great character. Yeah. Yeah.
I should do it.
So, but it was That's great cool. to see Ahsoka, especially, I mean, after, because I hadn't watched much Clone Wars before watching this, and Ahsoka was really annoying at the beginning of the Clone Wars, but by the end, she was a great badass character. So, Rosario Dawson was pretty good, and I'm looking forward to her series.
I think
she's reprising the role, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
cool.
Mm-hmm. I think this live action introduction to her was great too. Like, the two like white lightsabers in the dark and the misty sort of stuff looked really, really cool. And
she looked good.
I realized too, you know, earlier on when Mando first met Cara Dune, they have this brief fight and that's it. And when he first runs into Ahsoka, they have a brief fight before he's like, wait, I just want to talk. Yeah. So he's like, everybody he meets, he has to like take a punch or two, you know?
It's very comic booky. Anytime two sets of heroes meet, they fight a little bit first.
Right. Just a little bit.
That's how you shake hands.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But the look of this and the feel of it, it was such a great episode. That whole samurai aesthetic.
Remember it had that Karate Kid vibe at the beginning, right?
Yeah. It's so cool. The spear becomes important later. He fights a dark trooper with it. Mm-hmm. We learn Baby Yoda's name. That's kind of a big deal. And it kind of sets Mando on the path eventually to connect with Luke Skywalker because he's...
Right, yeah. And this was about the time when we were discussing on the podcast.
Who would it be?
How cool would it be if Skywalker showed up, right?
And I don't know for sure, but I'm sure I was probably like, no way it would be him. Come on.
Holding out hope.
Yeah.
All right. Season 2, Episode 6, The Tragedy. The Mandalorian takes Grogu to the ancient temple on Tython and places him on the Seeing Stone at its center. Grogu meditates and is surrounded by a protective energy field. Boba Fett soon arrives with the mercenary Fennec Shand, who the Mandalorian had previously left for dead on Tatooine. Fett explains that the armor worn by Cobb Vanth belongs to him, as his father Jango was a Mandalorian foundling. The Mandalorian agrees to return the armor in exchange for the safety of Grogu. Just as Moff Gideon arrives and deploys stormtroopers. Fett, Shand, and the Mandalorian repel the stormtroopers' attack, during which time Grogu finishes meditating and the energy field around him disappears. Gideon destroys the Razor Crest from orbit before deploying his droid Dark Troopers, who succeed in capturing Grogu. To honor their deal, Fett and Shand promise to help the Mandalorian get Grogu back. They travel in Fett's ship, Slave One, to Nevarro, and ask for Dune's help in breaking criminal Miggs Mayfield out of New Republic prison. Yeah, that's when they killed his ship, the Razor Crest.
Yep, so I can still picture it.
I know.
Being blasted to smithereens.
So sad.
It was unexpected, too.
Yeah, came from out of nowhere.
Like, what? Literally came from the sky out of nowhere.
I was upset about the ship being destroyed. It's, again, I liked it, and I didn't want to see it blow up. But there's no coming back from that explosion.
No.
Nope.
He was looking through the rubble, and he found his little ball of it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. The Yoda legs.
Everything was toothpick size. That sucker was gone.
Yeah.
For me, from the start, I felt like, oh, this is kind of a dumpy ship from him. He needs like more of a hot rod, which he eventually gets. But by the time this episode came around, I'd grown to like it just in time for it to be blown up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose they may have known what they were doing. And it was right after I bought the Lego set too. So I at least have that.
Oh, man.
Well, now you can just like smash it.
Yeah. I don't think I want to do that.
No more Razor Crest is a big story point. Grogu captured, of course, is huge. Yeah. And Boba Fett and Fennec Shand becoming allies. And Luke Skywalker signaled. That's what I wrote.
The Dark Troopers come down and take him away. Yeah. Like, they're in action. And they look really scary, I thought, when they were, like, fully operational. So,
yeah,
that's a thing, too.
I know. And that should be appreciated when they do something really well like that, because it's not always easy, like case in point, when they had those dumb teens with their colorful Vespas. Like, they don't always hit the mark.
That's right.
So with these Dark Troopers, they really did.
They did. One other note I made here is, even though the Razor Crest was destroyed, on the other hand, we kind of felt like we were going to get a little bit more Slave One, which was another ship that I always used to love, so... That's a bit of a softening the blow, I'd say.
It is. Right. Although,
and how big it was on the inside.
That's what I was just going to say. I think that's a bit of a cheat. I don't think that was the original intention for that, to have such a roomy inside.
Well, this thing's a lot. It's like the TARDIS or something. This thing's a lot bigger on the inside.
Oh, really is.
Funny.
Oh, we got to make fun of what bad shots the stormtroopers were again.
That's right. And, this is later, but since I just binged it, I remember Boba Fett. It's Cad Bane, the bounty hunter guy that confronts Boba Fett in the Boba Fett series, says, "You've grown soft in your old age." And he goes, "We all do." And I wondered if that was like Jon Favreau talking there, like, yeah, it's Disney-fied. That's what happens. I have kids.
It's soft a little bit eventually.
Yeah. They're talking what, like physically? Like with the dad bod and stuff, get a little soft.
That too.
Yeah. We all do. Yeah.
Can't avoid it.
All right. Season 2, episode 7, The Believer. Dune uses her new credentials as Marshal of the New Republic to transfer Mayfeld, an ex-Imperial, from prison to her custody. He agrees to help locate Moff Gideon's cruiser, but needs access to an internal terminal. He suggests a secret Imperial mining hub on Morak. Once there, Mayfeld and the Mandalorian hijack a transport carrying the explosive mineral Rhydonium and manage to reach the mining facility despite attacks from local pirates. They acquire Gideon's coordinates from the terminal, but the Mandalorian is forced to remove his helmet in front of others for the first time since he took his Mandalorian oath. The pair are confronted by Mayfeld's old Imperial commanding officer, whom Mayfeld kills when he gloats about the atrocities committed by the Empire in Operation Cinder. Mayfeld and the Mandalorian escape with the help of Shand, Dune, and Fett. Dune decides to let Mayfeld go. The Mandalorian sends Gideon a transmission warning that he is coming for Grogu, paraphrasing a similar speech that Gideon had previously given.
Mm. This is the one I was remembering about the base, yeah.
Yeah, but this is the one when I was going through that I kind of forgot this episode existed, to be honest. Once I was scanning through a bit, like, it all came back to me, and I really liked when those pirates or whatever hijack that transport that they're driving along, and he has to fight them on the roof and stuff. You see that all the time, but it was a good scene. I enjoyed it.
It was good until you realize that they're kind of like justified in what they're trying to do, and yet the Mandalorian just killed a bunch of them.
Well, you know,
but it was an exciting sequence.
Good action scene. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, I think this might be my least favorite episode, because the Mandalorian is in that dumb outfit the whole time with a dumpy helmet. And also it's just such a, in my opinion, stupid plot device that they have to find some ATM that somehow Mayfeld's able to punch in, but to get the coordinates of this high-ranking official ship, why would it be on there? And then Mando, who's not even in the system but needs to take off his helmet to be scanned, and that somehow lets him get these coordinates even though he's not in the system. Just it all felt very forced to me to, for a reason to have Mando take his helmet off, you know.
And it's not even his normal helmet too, right?
Like, yeah.
You, again, another helmet loophole, I feel like.
And that's also the one where they just like ended up walking out at the end, right? Like with a double high trench coat or something like that, hiding everybody in it.
No, four legs.
Is that the that's one where Obi-Wan. Walking out?
That's Obi-Wan. You're thinking of Obi-Wan.
Yeah, with Leia.
No, they had to bust, like, they were going to be okay, but Mayfeld couldn't control himself because his commanding officer was part of this operation where they end up killing a bunch of innocent people, and he was just pissed off that he had to be a part of that. So he starts giving him shit and then ends up just killing him. And Mando's like, what the fuck? And then they go out the window. And meanwhile, Fennec Shan and Cara Dune are outside just sniping anyone that's giving them trouble.
Right.
And so then Boba Fett comes in, and as they're going away, some TIE fighters come and he shoots that sound thing that goes
there's a name for that thing
I can't remember it.
I know.
That's the scene I was going to mention, that Slave One comes in and they drop that thing, which was pretty cool.
Yeah
Well, I'm sure I'm glad we're doing this. I'm realizing I remember the first season much better than I remember the second season.
There's some great episodes in both.
Yeah
So story points: Mando reveals his face here, and this is why the armor decreed he's no longer a Mandalorian and has to go back to Mandalore to be redeemed. I mean, he does it again next episode to say goodbye to Baby Yoda, so Baby Yoda and Luke Skywalker see his face, so that's also breaking his oath. But here he, Mayfeld saw it, and whoever else was around the ATM or whatever that terminal is.
That's funny. Alrighty, well, season 2, episode 8, The Rescue. The Mandalorian and Dune board an Imperial shuttle and capture Dr. Pershing. They enlist the help of Bo-Katan and Koska Reeves to rescue Grogu. In return, Bo-Katan will get Gideon's cruiser and the Darksaber, while the Mandalorian considers helping her liberate Mandalore. They use the shuttle to get close enough to crash land on Gideon's cruiser, with Fett pretending to attack them in Slave One. Bo-Katan, Koska, Shand, and Dune fight through stormtroopers to the cruiser's bridge. The Mandalorian finds the dark troopers, barely defeats one of them with the Beskar spear, and ejects the rest into space. He fights Gideon with the spear and overpowers him, making the Mandalorian the new rightful owner of the Darksaber. The dark troopers fly back into the ship, but are all destroyed by Luke Skywalker, the Jedi that Grogu contacted on Tython. The Mandalorian gives Grogu permission to go with Skywalker and R2-D2 to complete his training. In a post-credits scene, Fett and Shand travel to Jabba's palace on Tatooine, where Fett kills Bib Fortuna and claims the throne.
That's right.
So there we are.
Setting him up for his series, huh?
Yeah. There was a teaser for the Boba Fett show. But oh my God, guys, Luke Skywalker, the Dark Troopers, his whole scene coming in with the lightsaber. We don't see his face. He's just using the force. He was amazing. And like, we all knew what was going on, of course, but it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I spoiled that Luke was going to be in it just like hours before I watched it, but still, I was like, holy shit, look at this. The X-Wing comes in. Just seeing them, they did that so well, too, the way he just dispatched with them all stylishly. And like the last one, he just crunched it with the force.
Yeah. I was watching it with my wife and daughters. And when he showed up with Luke Skywalker, we were all like, jumping up and down and cheering.
And then his face looked pretty good, but then somebody did a YouTube video where it was even better, and I think they hired that guy to do the Luke scenes in Boba Fett.
I mean, I guess it's a good way to get a job, do a better job than the actual people.
Yeah, this episode, it might be my favorite. It was so great.
It was awesome.
So great.
I forgot that Bo-Katan gets Gideon's cruiser. She got a whole cruiser out of the deal.
Yeah, she should be happy. and so this is where Mando becomes the owner of the Darksaber, and she can't accept it, but has to win it in battle. So maybe setting up a future conflict or at least awkward situation. and Grogu and Mando are separated, which is super sad. And I was like, I love Luke, but man, the Jedi are fucked up, taking kids from their parents. And yeah, I guess that's about it. Now, I mean, if you just watched that and you didn't watch Boba Fett, you are missing like two crucial episodes of The Mandalorian that kind of they plopped into the middle of the Boba Fett series. And we're going to talk about those right now. If you don't want to be spoiled again, I'd stop listening and at least go watch those. You may have heard that the book Boba Fett was a bit of a disappointment. I think we all kind of thought it was, even though it has moments. But these two, it's really the last three that concern The Mandalorian, are very good. I would say all three of those are really good episodes and worth watching if you haven't seen them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it, Jason, that the Book of Boba Fett, a little bit of a disappointment, but had its moments. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of strange that they did this show, which ended up just being essential to The Mandalorian story almost more than anything
it really
else.
Did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And they plopped,
you have to watch these episodes.
Yeah, they're key. It's not just like Mando made a guest appearance. There were two episodes that were almost all The Mandalorian. And then in the last one, he played a fairly big part. But really, those two, it's episode 5 and 6.
Yeah, Boba Fett doesn't even appear in, is it 5?
5,
right?
Yeah.
Right. In fact, that's what it's retitled. Season 1, episode 5 of The Book of Boba Fett is Return of the Mandalorian. So after Mando tracks and kills a bounty, he delivers the bounty's head for directions to a Mandalorian hideout. There, he finds the armorer and Paz Vizsla, survivors of their tribe of Mandalorian warriors, who inspect the Darksaber that he won from Moff Gideon. The armorer explains that whoever wins the Darksaber in combat can become the ruler of Mandalore, though their civilization was destroyed by the Empire. The armorer turns Mando's Beskar spear into a gift for his former charge, Grogu. Vizsla, a descendant of the Darksaber's creator, Tar Vizsla, challenges Mando to a duel for the saber. Mando defeats Vizsla, but reveals that he previously broke their tribe's code by removing his helmet. Rejected by the tribe, Mando takes a commercial transport to meet Pelimoto on Tatooine, who has an old N1 starfighter to replace his previous ship, the Razor Crest. Working together, they fix and modify the starship, and Mando takes it for a test flight. Upon his return, Fennec Shand arrives and asks Mando to assist Boba Fett in the upcoming war. He agrees, but only after he visits a friend. Dang.
So, new ship. I mean, that's one of the most exciting bits of this one, I think, for me, because I wasn't sure about this ship. I sort of thought, is this thing too small? It's more like a, like you, I think you said, Jason, a hot rod or something like that. It's just a one person ship.
It's not like,
it's not a
like,
transport, you know?
Yeah. Like, you know, if you think in human terms, you'd want an RV if you were like touring the country, not like a Porsche.
Yeah. I mean, you don't, I mean, roadsters are cool and all that,
like,
but
he's going to have to find motels. He can't just sleep on it. Is there even a bathroom?
He had a Winnebago, and now he's got a Porsche.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have a bathroom, too, occasionally. You know, it's like...
place to sleep.
Yeah.
But it's cool. And that scene where he first gets in, and the way they fix it all up, and he's, like, running his finger down it, like, very much like hot rod porn kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then he starts driving it, and it's squirrely at first, and he's not sure. And she's like, you've been used to driving, I forget what she says, a transport or something, a gunship, but this is a hot rod or something. And so he figures out, oh, yeah, it's tighter handling, it's zippier, and then he starts really getting into it, you know?
And it's fast. Like, it's fun because it's fast. He can outrun anybody.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's what does it. It's fast. I mean, I don't know if you guys, Jason has a Tesla, and that thing is fast. And it's just like
this, because, you know, Mando has a button on this ship where he presses it, and the two X-Wing guys think that he went into light speed, or one of them, and he goes, that wasn't light. He just hit his thrusters or whatever. And my Tesla has that.
You got the thruster button on the Tesla?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Also, the armor talks about, you know, how he has to be redeemed and all this, but also, like, she really tells the other side of the story that Bo-Katan started. Like, when Bo-Katan takes off her helmet in that first episode that she's in, and Mandalorian's like, you're not, what, you took off your helmet, you're not a Mandalorian, and she goes, oh, you're part of the cult, like, you guys are crazy, basically, you know, you're a certain sect. And when the armor talks about it, she's like, yeah, we're the ones who have kept with the original way of the Mandalorians, and Bo-Katan's family and other people have gone away from it. And that's why they were destroyed at the Purge. So you can tell they both have their ideas about who's right and who's wrong about how to be a proper Mandalorian.
Right.
And that's interesting too. Like, there's just different approaches to this, and we got to figure out what our Mandalorian is going to do ultimately.
Yeah.
Right. And he's on his own now, right? Because they rejected him?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was going to be a part of their, they call it a covert, but they said you have to go to the mines under Mandalore in order to redeem yourself. They're pretty vague about it. And he said, Mandalore has been destroyed or something. And she goes, this is the way. So he can't be with them until he goes and does something there.
Which right. we will find out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's on his own now. And the next one is season one, episode six of Book of Boba Fett, called From the Desert Comes a Stranger. Mando flies to a forested world to, I'm just saying the parts that have to deal with Mandalorian here, because there is some Boba Fett plot, but we won't talk about that. Mando flies to a forested world to visit Grogu and is greeted by R2-D2 and Ahsoka Tano. Tano convinces Mando that his presence will hinder Grogu. So he returns to Tatooine after asking Tano to deliver the gift, a Beskar chainmail tunic, to the youngling. Oh yeah, we forgot to, or he had that made out of the spear. Jedi Master Luke Skywalker has begun training Grogu, his first student, to use the Force. Skywalker helps the youngling remember his home, the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, where he saw many Jedi killed during Order 66. Skywalker, bearing Mando's gift, gives a choice to Grogu: take the chainmail and stop his training, or take Yoda's lightsaber and be trained as a Jedi. It was take the chainmail and stop your training and go back to Mando, or take the sword, a lightsaber, and be trained as a Jedi and stay with Luke.
Man, that's a pretty tough decision for a child.
I know, a little baby.
He's 50 years old. Don't forget.
I'll take this shiny shirt.
And it was Yoda's saber that he had.
Oh, right. Right. Mm. Lots more Luke. I don't remember if Luke looked good in this one or not.
I think he looked better than he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was convinced.
Pretty good. Yeah. I liked it.
They hired that guy. That's right. So maybe he did this one.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But I did think it looked better. And I just enjoyed seeing Luke training. It was fun to see Luke training little Grogu, because it's like a role reversal. You know, first we saw Yoda training Luke, and now we see Luke, who's more of a Jedi now, training a Yoda species creature.
I never really thought about that, but that's really obvious that it is totally the other way around now.
Reverse.
That's not really accidental, yeah.
And Yoda can like hop around. I mean, not Yoda. Grogu can like hop around now. So I wonder if they'll have him doing that more in season three.
I hope not too much. A little bit of hopping is fine, but too much is too much.
You don't like the Yoda thing where he flips around all the time?
I don't like it.
Burp, burp, no. Like a little pinball?
Daffy Duck.
It's not my favorite thing.
The thing about, so with Ahsoka Tano in her first episode, she was looking into Grogu's mind and said there was some darkness in his memories. And here, same thing. It feels like there's a thing about where there's a period that he blocked out or something. We have seen parts where he's there at the Jedi Temple and we see the clone troopers come in. So that's like during Order 66 when they got the mental command to kill all the Jedi. And I think Ahsoka Tano said someone took Baby Yoda from the Jedi Temple, but we don't know who. And I looked it up. That's like 41 years. Like when Order 66 happened, that was in 32 BBY before Battle of Yavin, and Mandalorian the series starts at 9 ABY after Battle of Yavin. So that means the time between when Baby Yoda was taken from the Jedi Temple and then the time we meet him when Mando first gets him is 41 years apart. So he was only 9 years at the temple, 9 years old And so we wonder, like, what happened in between. I wonder if there's some story to be told there, you know, that we'll find out. I don't know.
Right.
Probably.
That makes him super young, huh?
Well, like, yeah. Yeah. He, I mean, that's so strange. Like, he seems like a child now. He would have been an infant then, you know? It's like...
Probably in diapers, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. Like, he acts like he's, like, like 1 year old right now.
Yeah. who knows? I mean, whatever species that is, maybe they're born, like, with at that state, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, and it takes a while to develop.
All right, well... the final episode on the list here is season 1, episode 7 of the Book of Boba Fett, called In the Name of Honor. R2-D2 flies Grogu, who has chosen Mando's chainmail, to Mando's hangar. Apparently there's a bunch of stuff about Boba Fett, Mando, Fennec Shand, the Wookiee Kersantan, and a bunch of Vespa-riding teens fighting the spice-running Pike Syndicate and bounty hunter Cad Bane. Fett rides in on a Rancor and fights two giant battle droids. It's awesome. Mando and Grogu fly away in their N1 starfighter. So, quicker summary for this one.
Yeah. This was more back to Boba Fett's story, but yeah. Mando was in it.
Yeah.
And we find out that Grogu chose him because R2-D2 drove him there in the X-Wing to deliver him.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, big deal. I mean, he chose Mando. He didn't decide
and
to
they're
stay
back together
with Luke. They're back together and looking for more adventures. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you saw The Mandalorian and you saw that, like, really heart-wrenching scene of Luke Skywalker showing up and Mando with a tear in his eye saying goodbye, and then you just watch season 3, episode 1, and, oh, they're together. What?
Yeah.
How'd that happen? I'm sure they'll show a recap or something, you know?
Probably, but still, I mean, it's weird. It's weird that they spun this off. Maybe they just figured everyone's going to watch it. We can just get away with it. I don't know.
But they didn't. I don't think Boba Fett had as big of numbers.
No, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they threw this in there so people would watch it.
Oh,
yeah. Those were my favorite episodes.
So yeah, you're dangling carrot, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You got to watch season... One episode 7, though. I mean, for anything, it's to watch a Rancor fight two giant battle droids.
It's very cool.
That was pretty badass.
Yeah, I do remember we were all looking forward to the Rancor showing up at the end before we knew exactly what was going to happen.
And it didn't disappoint. It was really well done. And that, like you mentioned, Rich, how in that one episode with the AT-ST, there was just one of them, but it did a lot of damage, you know?
Yeah.
And here, it's only two battle droids, but they just seem really formidable.
Yeah, they're terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Rancor had some trouble with him.
Yeah, and he rides the Rancor, right? Like, that's what I was looking forward to. Like, I didn't know that riding a Rancor was a thing before this show. So, good stuff.
Yeah, that was cool.
So, going forward, I mean, up until now in the series, it's been about Mando trying to keep Grogu safe and figure out what to do with them, and then decided to give him to the Jedi and did that. But now he's taken him back. So it seems like, we'll see what happens, but will it just be like, okay, he's with me now, and just move on to other priorities that he has?
Well, like, I wonder,
redeeming himself and.
Yeah, we're going to have that for sure. The redemption. But I wonder if maybe they're going, like, dark side Jedis are going to be coming after them, trying to get Grogu, right? Instead of...
Wait, what's a dark side Jedi? You mean like a Sith or something?
Yeah, like a Sith or something like that. Like, instead of Mandalorian trying to deliver Grogu to the Jedis, now he's fleeing or something like that. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but there's got to be something going on. I just don't think it can be just a buddy show of the two of them flying around doing stuff together.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I kind of wondered if they included this story about this cute little creature to start it off, but they didn't necessarily intend on keeping him in it forever, but he just became so popular that they're like, well, we have to. I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow. So hopefully they can keep coming up with good story lines for them. There was a trailer and I don't think I watched it, but I saw just one little snippet and I don't even want to say what I saw because I don't want to give anything away, but it looked damn cool. There was a lightsaber. I'll say that. There was a lightsaber in it.
Okay.
Oh, fine. Nice.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, well, they're part of the story now. I like your idea of having a Sith come after him, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, someone to flee, to get away from. Someone dangerous, you know? I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, that's like the ultimate bad guy.
Yeah.
They're not easy to defeat, Sith.
No. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch the trailer either. I'm not against watching trailers usually, but something about this one I didn't want to see. I just want to see it, you know, fresh.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
Yeah, I mean, it comes out in 5 days, so I want to experience it. You know, I don't want to know what's going to happen ahead of time.
Very exciting, and we're going to be podcasting about it.
That's right.
5 days.
All right. That is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We'll be podcasting about the show in 5 days. And if you want to, we love to get your feedback, your reactions, your questions, you know, everything like that. So if you want to write in or leave us a voice message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
Yeah, we cover this one show where there's a character played by Pedro Pascal who finds himself unexpectedly on a mission to protect a child who he ends up becoming bonded with. It's great. It's called The Last of Us.
But enough about this one again.
Yeah. Yeah, Pedro Pascal's on a roll.
Yeah. Did you watch his Saturday Night Live?
Just a couple of clips I saw on YouTube, yeah.
Did you see the...
He was good.
The coma one?
No, I didn't see the coma one.
He's in a coma, and he's like, his wife's there, and the doctor's like, yeah, he's waking up. And then he wakes up, and he's all, oh, hi, what, how you doing? And she's like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, I don't know who you are. And she's like, I'm your wife. And he goes, can we just put a pin in that? And they're like, why are you talking? He's talking with some LA mushmouth or something. And he goes, oh, you think I sound LA? I love LA. Thank you.
He's a crack up. He's charming. Hilarious.
Yeah, he is. That's why it's so weird to see him playing like Joel in The Last of Us and The Mandalorian. They're both very buttoned down characters who keep everything tight to the vest. And then you see him in real life and he's like super expressive and charming. And
goofy.
Smiley, yeah.
You should watch him in the Nick Cage movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
I saw that.
Great movie. I thought it was pretty good, and he's great in it. So
yeah, he's more expressive in that one.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, next episode of this podcast shall be The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 1, Chapter 17. They don't give out the titles ahead of time, so we'll find out next week.
Yeah.
Title to be determined.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
This is the way.